So now I have the pleasure of introducing tonight's speaker. She is, as you know, sober 13 years as of today. She has a sobriety date of March 25th, 2002. She has traveled all the way from, and I quote, the Black Belt of Sobriety, which is Porterville, California. She has a nickname of Chainsaw. And her favorite AA slogan is Let Go and Let God. And I'd like to introduce Jean Marie.
Hi, I'm Jean Marie. I'm an alcoholic. As was just announced, this is my 13th birthday. Yay, lucky number 13. I was thinking this morning when I got up, trying to remember how it was 13 years ago. And it just kind of made my blood chill, thinking about the emotional state that I was in at that time. My story is pretty much like everybody else's. You know, I had my first drink when I was 16. Didn't really drink that much as a teenager. Drank a lot when I was 16. That's why I didn't drink much again until I was about 21. My father was an alcoholic. And I kind of saw the wreckage that sort of behavior creates in a family. You know, it was mainly financial stuff. I remember my brother and I having to work very, very hard trying to help my mom keep the house going. And that was difficult, to say the least. And I'm sure that I'm not the only one in this room that's experienced that kind of stuff, you know, sort of doing without. I got married when I was 18. I had my first baby when I was barely 19. I had my second child when I was 21. It was during the time of the Vietnam War, so my husband was in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba when I had my first child, in the Bay of Pigs thing, so he wasn't around for that. And he was in Vietnam when I had my second child, so he wasn't around for that. So consequently, he didn't really bond with the kids, and we were young. I was looking at somebody the other day, came up to my door, I live in a senior mobile home park, and one of the kids, is not a kid, he's a young man, he was telling me he was 19, and I looked at him and I thought, oh my gosh, he seems so young. He was so young, and I sort of gave me a feeling of forgiveness towards my kid's dad, because I thought, my God, we were just kids. We were just kids. We're just babies, trying to raise babies, you know. And I'm sure he had PTSD and all that other stuff that goes along with that. But nobody told us about, you know, we didn't know about that stuff. And I'm glad that that stuff is all out now in regards to some of the other veterans that come back, because that's a really big deal. That's a big deal for the people that stay home too. You know, I didn't drink alcoholically until I was in Alaska. I was 57 years old. I drank alcoholically for a year and a half. And I could not stop. I could not stop. But I'm here to tell you that the ism had me at 18 years old. Anytime I ever got in any kind of trouble, any bad decision I've ever made, any of my many marriages that I got into, and the situations in which I found myself was all related to alcohol. You know, I would end up in places I really shouldn't be, with people I shouldn't be with, and then feel so ashamed. You know, I just would feel ashamed of myself most of the time. I was not a very good mother. I loved my kids, but I didn't have the training. I didn't have the understanding. I didn't have the patience, the wisdom, whatever. You know, maturity, a lot of it, to be a good parent. And for those of you that are in this room that have young kids, I'm going to beg you, deal with it now. Deal with your stuff now. Deal with taking care of your kids now, because I'm going to tell you what, the mommy guilt is really a bummer. You know, when your kids come to you when they're, 30 years old and ask you, Mom, do you remember the time you, fill in the blanks? It's very, very distressing, and there is nothing you can do about it. You know, I've made my life a living amends to my children the best I could. But if I'd had more information, if I had even AA, I mean, the stuff was not available then. I'm not using that as an excuse for anything. Like I say, I didn't start drinking until I was 57. I was on my fifth marriage, and I'd moved to Alaska. I was a great one for taking geographicals. Once the kids were out of high school, then I went all over the place, always behind a relationship, always looking for somebody to make it right. You know, that's kind of the era in which I grew up, that once you got the right man, you know, once you had the right whatever, you know, everything would be okay, that kind of Intel script, you know, someday my prince will come, voila. You know, and I'm sure it's the same thing for guys, not looking for a princess necessarily, but, you know, maybe once you have the job that you want, or once you have whatever, when some certain thing happens for you, then everything's going to be fine. You know, and I, as far as the way I raised my kids, I was always thinking, I'm going to hurry and get settled once I get married, just one more time. And then I'll be settled, and everything will be fine, and I'll have the little house with the roses and the white picket fence. And the only white picket fence I got in roses was the one that I got myself in the home that I'm living in now when I was 65 years old. So I really wish that I had had the understanding and maturity to make some different choices, because it would have made a lot of difference to my family. I think that all of us have to look at the things that we do, and we look at the consequences. Once you sober up, it's kind of hard to look at what, you know, like they say, we come through people's lives like a tornado and look at the things that we've done and how badly we've hurt people, and then you try to deal with the guilt, and you try to deal with all that other stuff on top of trying not to drink. You know, that was the challenge. You know, I ended up in Alaska. That's where I got sober, of all places. It's true what they say about the alcohol can really take you out there, but I think it could have taken me out probably anywhere in the state of mind that I was in. I don't think it made one bit of difference whether the sun was up or the sun was down. I was pretty crazy. They teased me about being called Chainsaw. I really wanted to be outside when I was in Alaska, and it was so miserable, and everybody was, you know, you're cooped up in these houses. So I go outside, and I had this chainsaw with this long electric cord, and chainsawed up the trees in the yard. And I was just nuts, just absolutely crazy. At one point, I had a chainsaw with like a 200-foot cord that I was dragging through the water. Can you believe that? And I threw it over my shoulder, and I climbed up this tree. Really, I mean, an actual tree, not a bush, a tree. I climbed up there. I guess I thought I was invincible. And I wanted to cut down some stuff on this berm, and so I was hanging on to the branch in the tree, and I swung my leg over like a giant female orangutan. And I had the chainsaw with one hand going, and I was cutting down stuff until I cut the cord in half and made everything spark, and then I jumped down out of the tree. And then somehow or other I had a neck injury while I was there. I don't know how that happened. I ended up with three ruptured discs. I don't know if it was from jumping out of the tree, but I'm pretty sure that didn't help. I'm pretty sure that it was a combination of a lot of other things that I did in my life that was very, very hard on my body. And I ended up having to have three ruptured discs fixed, and I have a titanium plate in my neck, and my head was all stiff, and I had this brace on, and I was going for it with the drinking. I had a handful of prescription meds, and we won't go into all that, this is AA, and I would take a handful of those with my bourbon. You know, and for the longest time, I told myself that I couldn't possibly be an alcoholic because I never drank rot gut anything. I mean, how crazy is that? The only thing that that proved was that I was lucky enough to keep a job, that I had some money and I could buy some good stuff, and I did. But I could not stop drinking. Could not stop drinking. I tried to get home from work in Alaska. They have package stores. They don't sell the alcohol in a grocery store like we do here. And every night I wouldn't want to get like a big bottle because then you might think I was like an alcoholic. Ew. So there was like three different places that you could go in town, so I would kind of like space it out because, you know, they wouldn't really notice. And then walk in, I'd go, hi, you know, how you doing? Just crazy stuff. One night I did manage to make myself get all the way home, and I didn't have anything to drink, and I thought, oh my God, I'm going to die. So I went out in a blizzard. Now, I mean, keep in mind, in Alaska, you can't go anywhere without survival gear on. You know, and I was bundled up like the Michelin man. I couldn't even hardly move, and I went into this place and said, hi, you know, got myself my alcohol, you know. It was awful, and I couldn't stop. You know, that feeling that we talk about, that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, just wanting to stop. I knew what was happening. I was an alcohol and drug counselor, and I still couldn't stop myself. I was working as a child protective services worker, and I would be writing up service plans for people, telling them, I've got your kids because you drink too much. And every time I would write that stuff down, and in my mind, I'd just be screaming, you fucking hypocrite. What a liar. I mean, it made me sick at myself. It made me sick that I was doing that, and I didn't want to do it, and I didn't know what to do about it. I really didn't. I was going to a therapist there because I didn't want to go to AA because, God, somebody might, like, know me there. Isn't that crazy how we, you know, we can be drunk all over everywhere and doing all the crazy stuff we do, but we don't want to be seen at an AA meeting because somebody might know we were an alcoholic. The therapist that I went to asked me, and this was my moment of clarity. She said, what would you do if your daughters wouldn't let you see your grandchildren? And all of a sudden, I just saw the light just shone on me, and I thought, my God, look at you. Look what you've become. And I really saw myself as I was, because they shouldn't have let those kids be around me. They really shouldn't have. And they were back here in California trying to make three-way phone calls, trying to see what Mom was doing, and I'd be all drunk and crazy. I'm sure I'd put them through absolute hell. But even that didn't stop me. Just, you know, when I saw what I was, I thought, oh my God. But I didn't stop right that minute. I knew I had to. And I knew I was prepared to, but I just couldn't quite do it. And so I had this operation, and I couldn't get out and do anything. It was real icy, and I, you know, I had to keep my head straight and all that. So I was listening to Joyce Meyer. There's not a whole lot on Alaska TV. And I've been praying, of course, like we all prayed. I'm sure I'm not the only one that's prayed. We've all prayed, God, please let me stop. What's wrong with me? Why am I doing this? Why did I end up in a bar? Why? Why am I acting like this? And I heard Joyce Meyer say, and I'll probably cry when I say this, I always do, there's no pit you're in that's so deep that God can't reach in and get you out. And I just felt something wash over me. I really did. I mean, it was a physical feeling. I know it's not that way for everybody, but I felt something just kind of come through me. And I went in the bathroom and I poured that drink down the sink and I poured out the rest of my bottles. And by the grace of God and the fellowship of AA, I haven't had to pick up another bit of alcohol since that time. You know, thanks. I'm really grateful I'm really grateful for my sobriety. But I'm grateful for so many other things too. You know, when I decided that I needed to come home, and my son-in-law in Porterville told my daughter, tell your mom to come anyway, because I was trying to get a job. I've always been able to get a job. If you're a social worker, you can pretty much work anywhere. I mean, you're crazy as hell working with people's lives, but they'll hire you. And I was trying to beat it out of there before the snow. Trying to get out of there before it started snowing. So I left there in July and came to Porterville, and I've been here ever since. You know, when I first got here, I was used to real small meetings because, you know, Alaska's little. And I remember going to one meeting and everybody was like throwing spitballs and being all crazy and stuff, and I was in tears, and I thought, oh my God, I don't know if I can stay sober here. I was petrified, absolutely petrified, because I didn't know what to do, and I didn't have enough of my own stuff at that point. I didn't have enough to give or enough maturity or whatever. But I went to a meeting in Lindsay. It was a couple months before I went back to a meeting. I went to a meeting in Lindsay, and I can remember sitting out at the curb in my car crying and praying, God, please, please let this be a good meeting. Please don't let me drink again. You know, and I walked in there, and it was the nicest older gentleman there. Not that I'm old. And you know, I had gotten there early because I really didn't know where I was. I didn't know anybody, didn't know where I was. You know, the only person I knew here was my daughter and my family here. And the next person that walked in the room was a guy from Alaska that lived in the very town where I had just come from. You know, and I had someone to talk to. I had somebody that I could say, hey, do you remember this or do you remember that? I mean, I felt like I was a stranger in a strange land. You know, I've been coming to Porterville for a long time because my daughter and her family live here, but I hadn't been part of this. I mainly lived in Northern California, so I didn't know anybody. I didn't know where I was most of the time, and to find somebody that I could talk to, it was like, oh, thank you, God. And I went to a meeting in Exeter and met this really crazy lady who I asked to be my sponsor, and she was a lot of fun. She took me to meetings all over everywhere and introduced me to lots of people, and all of a sudden, from having nobody, I had a family. You know, and I was so, so grateful for knowing some people. And when I would walk into a room, as you guys know, we all go, you know, hi, and they say your name, and you feel like, oh my God, somebody knows me. I didn't feel so lonely. I really felt that I was going to make it. I really felt that I was going to make it. You know, I worked the steps, did my inventory, did all the things that we know we need to do. I often wonder why we dread that inventory so much. You know, it's such a relief once you get it done, especially when you realize that you didn't do anything worse than anybody else did, and probably not as bad as some. You know, it's not that big of a deal. But I've worked the steps many times, and I've done many, many inventories. When something starts really bothering me, then I know what I need to do. So, you know, doing a 10th step, you know, the daily thing, keeping a constant contact with your higher power, that's really important. But once in a while, you really need to get in there and dig out the real deep stuff. And, you know, I would encourage anybody that's new in your sobriety to get in there and get that 4th step done, because it's a big relief once you get it finished. You know, I've heard it said, and I truly believe this, that you will find anything you need here in AA. There's nothing that you will ever need that you won't find here. You will find friends when you didn't think you knew anybody. You know, we don't have to. We're all so different. We're all very, very different. You know, we're different ages, different whatever. But the bottom line is that we all share the common malady that we could not quit drinking. And by the grace of God, you know, we are doing much better now. I am. I feel really good about things, and I want to share what I have to give with other people. I think I'm kind of running out of steam. God, Phil, you said that might happen. No, I'm not all the way done yet. I'm just taking a breath and taking a drink of water.
Hi, girl. There you go.
I'd like to talk a little bit about service in AA, because it's so important that we be of service. And I've come to realize over the years, I mean, you know, I've been a secretary and all those things, you know, that they do the AA railroad, woo-hoo, you know, you're recruited. And I've done those things, and there's some things I liked and some things I didn't care. I'm not much of a one for the business meetings and all that kind of stuff. It's not really my cup of tea as far as doing some of that stuff. But I've come to realize that we all have to do what we have to do, and we need to contribute however we can. And sometimes just being a smiling face is being of service. Sometimes making a cake is being of service. There's all kinds of things we could do. I have certain meetings that I go to feed myself, you know, because I need to stay sober. I really want to stay sober. It's important to me. But I have other meetings that I go to because I want to be there for somebody else. And I'm more than willing to open up. I started to say some of the wounds. I don't know, that sounds kind of dramatic, but sometimes when you get in there and start digging out your stuff, it can be a little bit painful. But I'm willing to do that to help somebody. I'm willing to be a little bit uncomfortable to share my story with somebody else, especially with the things about, like I said before, the mommy guilt, because I think that's a huge issue. And I'm sure you guys have the same guilt too as we do, you know. It's just women are supposed to be ladies and all this other stuff, you know, and that's the way I was raised. It's supposed to be very ladylike. Well, some of the stuff that I did it very quietly and in a very ladylike way, but it actually wasn't really very ladylike. I think it's real important that we stay connected with one another. Very, very important that we're connected, that we respect anonymity. And these groups, you know, I was thinking when I came in and we were all laughing and everything and having a good old time. But the minute it got serious, I mean, this room got as quiet as a pin. Because you know what? This is life or death to us. This is my life. I don't want to ever end up in a place that I was before emotionally. You know, I've been sober for 13 years, but I'm really work on my emotional and spiritual sobriety at this point. And I think it's very, very important that we give our attention to that once we get some of the physical stuff out of the way. Not to say that I don't think I could drink again, because I probably could, and I don't put myself in those positions. I really, really don't. I get really annoyed when you see there was a certain kind of liquor I like and they made some different flavors of it, and it really made me mad because I didn't get to taste any of that stuff. You know, and then when I look at it and I think to myself, think the drink, would you have one? No. I go, oh, look, they got the big bottle on sale. I mean, I still think like that, even though I don't want to drink. I hope I never, ever drink again. But I still have that alcoholic mind. I'd like to close with something out of Daily Reflections, and this is for today. This is March 25th, a full and thankful heart. I try hard to hold fast to the truth that a full and thankful heart cannot entertain great conceits. When brimming with gratitude, one's heart beats must surely resolve in ongoing love, the finest emotion that we can have ever known. This is from Asbel Sees It. I believe that we in Alcoholics Anonymous are fortunate, and they were constantly reminded of the need to be grateful and of how important gratitude is to our sobriety. I'm truly grateful for the sobriety God has given me through the AA program, and I'm glad to give back what was given to me freely. I'm grateful not only for sobriety, but for the quality of life that my sobriety has brought. God has been gracious enough to give me sober days and a life blessed with peace and contentment, as well as the ability to give and receive love and the opportunity to serve others in our fellowship, in my family, in my community. For all this, I have a full and thankful heart. Thank you.
Wow.